This is the WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you.
Your host, J. Paul Newman of the monthly District Attorney Show, will now take you on a journey to explore recent Rutherford County court cases, cold cases, and more.
The viewpoints and opinions expressed on this broadcast are the viewpoints and opinions of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and opinions of this show, its host, or the management of this station. You are listening to WGNS.
We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-hosts are former District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr., and current Rutherford County District Attorney Jennings Jones.
We thank WGNS for providing the airtime. And we also thank our producer, Scott Walker. Most of all, we thank you for listening.
In our Inside the Courts segment, Rutherford County District Attorney General Jennings Jones will inform you about recent grand jury, general sessions, and circuit court activity. Today, in our What's the Law segment, former District Attorney General Bill Weitzel will discuss cold case investigations with Sergeant Dan Goodwin of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office. In our Call to Conviction segment, we will highlight the 1984 murder of MTSU student Laura Salmon. We will provide you with a behind-the-scenes look at the investigation and the trial that followed over 26 years later in August of 2006. We will also look at the important role that the Laura Salmon case has played in our criminal justice system. My two guests that will discuss the Laura Salmon case are Sergeant Dan Goodwin of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office and forensic scientist and blood spatter expert, Jerry Finley.
We will begin our broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
When you have fire, water, or storm damage, Farrah Construction can help. Farrah Construction is also there to help when a car slams through the wall. Call Farrah Construction and we'll board up, put down tarps, secure your home or business until the insurance coverage is approved. Call Farrah Construction at 615-893-6120. I'm Ron Hall. Shop local. Let our family business help you. Farrah Construction Company.
Hi, this is Dan at Music World and Drummer's Den. We have new things going on here for Christmas. We have gift cards available for any amount from a dollar up to whatever you want to spend on it. We have Christmas specials going on. Our prices are competitive. Sometimes we're even below the online prices. We have layaway plans available, and this is real popular at Christmas. Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church, right across the street from Indian Hills Golf Course.
We are broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Download the MyMTE app in Google Play or in the iTunes Store and keep up with your electric usage. Simply search for MyMTE today.
This is Peter Demas from Demas's Restaurant. Our family wants to wish you a Merry Christmas. Christmas is about an incredible act of love to be treasured every day of the year. It's about the sacrifice that God made for us, sending his son to this world as a man to redeem us from our sins. In Luke chapter 2, verses 10 and 11, the angels proclaimed, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord." Merry Christmas from Demas's Restaurant.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com. This is Inside the Courts, a look at this month's trials, pleas, and grand jury action. Inside the Courts is presented as a courtesy of the Rutherford County Clerk's Office.
Good morning, everyone. This is your District Attorney General, Jennings Jones, and today I will be your tour guide through this episode of Inside the Courts. We begin this segment by stating that none of the defendants named in upcoming trials or hearings have been convicted, and of course, they are presumed by our law to be innocent. With that as a prelude, we will now go inside the courts. On March 9th of this year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call for shots fired at a residence on East Vine Street in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Upon arrival, officers discovered Mr. Davion Gates lying unresponsive in the driveway of his residence, suffering from multiple gunshot wounds. Mr. Gates died from his injuries. Detective Justin Fugate with the Murfreesboro Police Department was assigned as the lead investigator. Multiple persons resided in the residence, and officers learned that the 23-year-old gunshot victim was a romantic partner of one of the residents, a 41-year-old female. Also at the residence was a 44-year-old Corey Munsell Lillard. Mr. Lillard is the father of several of the female residents' children. Mr. Lillard was also staying at the residence at the time of the shooting. Detective Fugate interviewed multiple witnesses, but also reviewed video jail calls between Mr. Lillard and one of his sons that was incarcerated at the Rutherford County Adult Detention Center. Mr. Lillard was on a video call with his son at the time of the shooting. From a review of this video, as well as evidence collected on the scene, Mr. Lillard was charged with first-degree murder, maintaining a dwelling with the purpose of selling or using narcotics, possession of a Schedule II drug with the intent to resell, possession of drug paraphernalia, and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. A preliminary hearing was held on June 18th of this year before the General Sessions Court, and probable cause was found to bind the matter over for presentation to a Rutherford County grand jury. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. John Slager, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland. On April 13th of this year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call for shots fired on South Rutherford Boulevard in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Upon arrival, officers discovered the body of Mr. Paul Howell in the roadway. Mr. Howell had been shot in his throat and died as a result of his injuries. Detective Andrew Stallnacher was assigned as lead investigator. Also on scene was Mr. Brian Craig, a friend of Mr. Howell's. Mr. Craig had sustained a single gunshot to the arm. Witnesses to the shooting reported a road rage incident where Mr. Howell and Mr. Craig were nearly run off the road by an unknown driver. All parties came to a stop at a red light, and a verbal altercation led to shots being fired by the unknown driver. Almost 30 minutes after the incident was reported, Mr. Joseph R. Gann called 911 to report that he was the shooter. Mr. Gann was interviewed along with multiple witnesses. At the conclusion of the initial investigation, Mr. Gann was charged with second-degree murder, attempted second-degree murder, and reckless endangerment with a deadly weapon. Mr. Gann is represented by counsel, Mr. Josh Crane. The state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. This matter has been bound over by agreement to be presented to a Rutherford County grand jury. On May 15th of this year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call of shots fired at a gas station on Joe B. Jackson Parkway in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Officers discovered the body of Mr. Devin Lawrence. Mr. Lawrence had been shot multiple times in the back and died from his injuries. Officers also located Mr. Eric Mitchell, Mr. Lawrence's brother. Mr. Mitchell had been shot once in the arm and beaten across the head, face, and body. Also on scene was Mr. Juan Charco and his brother. This altercation was captured on video surveillance. Detective William Pullius was assigned as the lead investigator. Upon conclusion of the detective's investigation, officers discovered that Mr. Charco and his brother were in the process of illegally transporting a vehicle that was owned by Mr. Lovitz from Atlanta, Georgia to Nashville, Tennessee, without Mr. Lovitz's knowledge or consent. Mr. Lovitz and his brother confronted Mr. Charco and his brother and took the vehicle back at gunpoint. When Mr. Lovitz and Mr. Mitchell were attempting to drive away in their own vehicles, Mr. Charco retrieved a semi-automatic rifle and shot over 25 times at the two men. Mr. Charco has been charged with second-degree murder and attempted second-degree murder. This matter has been bound over by agreement and awaits presentation to a Rutherford County grand jury. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Jeffrey Jackson, while the state will be represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. On February the 15th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call of shots fired in an apartment complex on Puckett Creek Crossing. Officers discovered the body of Miss Rebecca Stockton on the floor of her apartment. Miss Stockton had been shot multiple times. Detective Julie Cox with the Murfreesboro Police Department was assigned as the lead investigator. Miss Stockton's live-in boyfriend, Salim Hamilton, was missing. A manhunt for Mr. Hamilton was ordered, and he was located in Corbin, Kentucky, where he was found to be in possession of the rental car of Miss Stockton and a .40-caliber semi-automatic handgun. Miss Stockton was shot and killed by a .40-caliber semi-automatic handgun. Mr. Hamilton was charged in Kentucky with possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. The Murfreesboro police charged him with first-degree murder and extradited him back to Tennessee from Corbin, Kentucky. A preliminary hearing was held on January the 4th of this year, and the General Sessions Court bound the case over for presentation to a Rutherford County grand jury, where the defendant was indicted for first-degree murder, tampering with evidence, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, and employing a firearm during the commission of a felony. The state will be represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland, while the defendant is represented by Mr. Chris Fisher. The last court date for this case was held yesterday, October the 30th. On July the 11th of 2022, officers with the Smyrna Police Department responded to a reported aggravated assault. Upon arrival, officers discovered that two brother-in-laws, Mr. Jason Munivong and Mr. Edgar Mercado, got into a verbal disagreement. At one point during the argument, Mr. Munivong pulled a firearm on Mr. Mercado and pointed it at him. According to witnesses, Mr. Mercado was unarmed and had not exhibited any aggressive behavior toward Mr. Munivong. Mr. Munivong was arrested for aggravated assault. In April of 2023, a Rutherford County grand jury indicted Mr. Munivong for aggravated assault, and on August 21st of this year, a jury of his peers convicted Mr. Munivong for aggravated assault. A sentencing hearing is scheduled for the end of this year. The defendant was represented by counsel Mr. Rob McKinney, while the state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Sarah Davis. A trial is scheduled to begin on January the 7th of next year on Mr. Chris Robinson and Mr. Chris White for the allegations of first-degree murder, aggravated burglary, especially aggravated robbery, especially aggravated kidnapping, employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, and tampering with evidence. Mr. White is represented by Mr. Paul Bruno, while Mr. Robinson is represented by Mr. Rob McKinney and Mr. Brian Lewis. The state will be represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Ashley Hall. A trial is scheduled to begin on February the 20th of next year on Apollo Cantrell for allegations of first-degree murder, aggravated assault, reckless endangerment, employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony, and possession of a handgun by a convicted felon. The state will be represented by Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland, while the defendant will be represented by Mr. David Clark. A trial is scheduled to begin on March 10th of next year on Dontorius and Donzala Hamler for second-degree murder, 2 counts of attempted second-degree murder, 6 counts of aggravated assault, employing a firearm during the commission of an offense, and reckless endangerment. Mr. Hamler is represented by counsel Mr. Ben Wetzel with the Public Defender's Office, and Ms. Hamler is represented by Ms. Jennifer Fiola. The state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Matt Westmoreland and Trevor Lynch. A trial is scheduled to begin on April 21st of next year on Jeffrey Burris for an allegation of first-degree murder. The defendant is represented by Murfreesboro attorney Mr. Josh Crane, while the state is represented by attorneys Haley Ranieri and Trevor Lynch. A trial is scheduled to begin April 28th of next year on Dante Martin for allegations of first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, 2 counts of aggravated assault, reckless endangerment, carrying a weapon on school property, and employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony. The defendant is represented by counsel Mr. Jacob Findlay, while the state will be represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland. And that will conclude today's look inside the courts.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Life changes, then it changes again. Hi, I'm Edward Jones Financial Advisor Lee Colvin. A job loss, change in health, or loss of a loved one can have a big impact on your family's financial security. Let's work together to help make sure that you're equipped for life's unexpected events. Stop by our office in the Public Shopping Center on South Rutherford Boulevard or give us a call at 615-907-7056 for an appointment. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
Hi, this is Tina Fox at your Rutherford Farmers Co-op. If you're looking for that unique Christmas gift, please come see us. We have everything you need for your holiday season. We have the clothing that will keep you warm from our Carhartt to your feet with our muck boots. We also have a great selection of fashion clothing for our ladies. And if you're looking for a unique gift, say for your patio, we also have our wonderful handmade wooden furniture. That's all here at the Co-op Farm and Home Center just off of South Church.
This is Paul Newman. This broadcast often asks for the community's help in solving cold case homicides. It is my belief that the law enforcement agencies that deserve special recognition for citizen service are those agencies that address the need for cold case homicide investigation units. Our community was blessed to have a community leader who distinguished himself in this area. That leader is former Rutherford County Sheriff Truman Jones. Under Truman Jones's leadership, the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office established the first cold case investigation unit in Rutherford County. It is a unit which has had remarkable success and sent a clear message that unsolved murder cases are never closed, for there is no expiration date on a murder case. It also sent the message that a murder victim's family should never feel abandoned because law enforcement never forgets an unsolved murder or its victim. And the final message is that people who commit murder should always know that law enforcement may be coming at any time to hold them accountable for taking a human life. In our What's the Law segment, former District Attorney General Bill Weitzel Jr. will discuss these topics and more with Sergeant Dan Goodwin of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office. Sergeant Goodwin is a former founding member of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office's Cold Case Investigation Unit. It is now time for this edition of What's the Law?
What's the Law? Time now for an examination of the laws of Tennessee. This is not intended to be legal advice and is being presented solely for the informational benefit of our listening audience. You should always consult with an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice.
How important is the cooperation of WGNS in cooperating and helping us get this information out concerning cold case investigations?
Well, obviously, public is very important. There are people out there that know about these cases, and there may be somebody that knows some details or some specific fact that might come to light and help us solve these cases. So we feel like this will be a way to communicate with the public and hopefully encourage the public to communicate with us or with law enforcement.
Tell the listeners, why is it important to have a cold case unit?
It's important because when we talk about the public at large doesn't have jurisdictional lines. So it's important that all of the agencies involved work as a team. They're kept abreast of what the other agency may be doing. They share information that they have or information that may come to light. And it gives us an ability to use a team approach to trying to solve these cases. It also gives us the ability to have a fresh set of eyes and ears to look at these cases and maybe see something or recognize something that we've missed in the past.
How important is the cooperation of the community in helping us solve these crimes?
It's absolutely imperative that we have the community support. After all, as I said, there are people out there that know about these crimes. They may have seen something. They may have heard something that would be very important or instrumental in solving these unsolved cases. Today's modern jury in the society, the technological society we live in, they expect physical evidence. They expect DNA or fingerprints. And that comes from watching television shows where the latest technology is used to often solve cases. But in my experience, and in particular with cold cases, although technology may help us, it comes down to just good old investigative techniques, talking to people, finding other people, working those cases and going out and being an investigator.
Detective Goodwin, can you tell us how important seminars and training is to cold case investigation?
It's absolutely important to all agencies, no matter what their size is these days. They need to get good training and frequently. And the seminars also allow us, and we've had a couple of them here in the last few years, allows us to network, make connections with other folks otherwise, because as the general was alluding to, it's not standing in a room waving your hair on an air screen that doesn't really exist. It's getting out driving. It's gasoline. It's shoe leather and it's rubber on the tires. You got to get out and see people. If you know cold case agents in other areas, they can sometimes do some of that footwork for you. But usually there's no substitute for having the phrase of the day, boots on the ground, wherever the witnesses or the bad guys are. We got to go there and talk to them ourselves eventually.
I know that you have not only investigated cold cases, but other cases as well. Tell us, what is the difference, if there is a difference, in cold case investigation as opposed to other criminal investigations?
Well, particularly in homicides, you know, there's a TV show, The First 48 Hours. As you know, as a former homicide investigator yourself, is really the first 72 hours, a hot case. You're fighting against time, going as rapidly as you can. A lot of times we have a hot murder, if you will. Folks don't sleep for several days. They're trying to get everything they've done that they possibly can. In cold cases, time is on your side. The passage of time up to a certain point helps you because relationships change, as we've found in all the cases we work. We mine now bad relationships to find nuggets of information, and a lot of times those nuggets are admissions to a murder, and we can get into it a little bit later, but those admissions have basically been our stock in trade, finding people that the bad guys have told they did it.
In this particular program, we're going to be asking the community to help us. Yes. Can you tell us why should the community want to become involved in an investigation of a homicide?
Basically, it's a civic duty if you have knowledge. And one of the things we run into, General, is that many of the people that we speak to are reticent at first. They think because they've had knowledge and not shared it, not immediately called 911 and told someone that they're in some sort of trouble themselves. That's just not true. By and large, one of the things, especially in the Salmon case, we found is folks hadn't come forward because the police had never gone to talk to him. We were fortunate we found a dear friend of hers early on, and she gave us a number of names, and that launched a whole series of events.
We're excited to announce that Capstar Bank is now officially a division of Old National Bank. All those friends you've made while banking here over the years, well, they're still there, and so are the delicious, warm, homemade cookies.
In Murfreesboro at 2230 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Everything you enjoyed at Capstar, still there at Old National Bank. Old National Bank, ready to serve you.
Old National Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
We'll return to host Paul Newman, retired from the Rutherford County District Attorney's Office, and he'll continue to bring you up to date on cold cases, current cases, and law enforcement investigations on the Rutherford County District Attorney's Show.
On this broadcast, we are profiling a true super case. It is the case that led to the creation of Rutherford County's Cold Case Investigative Unit. It is the 1984 murder of Laura Salmon.
To discuss this case, we are honored to have with us today one of the experts who testified in the trial itself. Jerry Finley will offer expert insight regarding the blood evidence found at the crime scene. Jerry Finley's expert testimony provided valuable evidence. Jerry Finley is an expert in crime scene reconstruction and blood pattern analysis. Mr. Finley, we want to welcome you to Murfreesboro, and we want to welcome you to the broadcast.
Thank you for having me here.
To start with, tell us what a crime scene reconstructionist does.
A crime scene reconstructionist analyzes the evidence recovered from a crime scene, analyzes the crime scene, the autopsy, and takes all of that and puts it together into the sequence of events that took place within a crime scene.
What type of information and assistance can an expert in blood pattern analysis provide to the law enforcement officers to help them investigate the case?
Well, in a lot of cases, when you have a statement, there's some parts of it that you may or may not believe or is not consistent with the evidence. So therefore, the blood pattern analyst and the reconstructionist can put together the types of things that are in the statement that are true and the types of things in the statement that are not true based on the physical evidence and the crime scene itself.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and especially about your prior law enforcement training and experience.
I've been involved in forensic investigations for close to 41 years now. Started out with the Chatham County Police Department in Savannah, Georgia, and was there as a forensic investigator. When I retired from there, I went to work for the state of Georgia in the Department of Public Safety as the supervisor of forensic science and death investigation training for the state. I began consulting outside of that in 1980 and have been consulting as well as teaching ever since.
In your current capacity, I know that you wear multiple hats. You offer your services as an expert witness, and you're in great demand to speak at law enforcement training seminars. How many trials have you testified in as an expert witness?
154.
And what different states have you testified, or how widespread has your testimony been?
Well, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, as well as Texas and Colorado.
I first met you several years ago when you taught a week-long one-man blood pattern analysis seminar at the Murfreesboro Police Department. Tell us how it was that we were fortunate enough to get you to come to Murfreesboro.
Well, I teach for the Institute of Police Technology and Management at the University of North Florida in Jacksonville, and one of the officers from Murfreesboro attended one of the courses down there and asked me if I would be willing to come to Murfreesboro and teach the same course up here, which I agreed to, and so came to Murfreesboro and taught the first course. That's when I met you.
In that first course, I attended that, and during that particular course that you were teaching, we actually brought over some genes used in the Cal Gilley case.
That's true. Yes, sir.
And as I remember, you examined those, and we had you look at them during a lunch break.
Yes, sir.
And from that, you were kind enough to take those and further examine them, and then come back to Murfreesboro and testify in the trial.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Can you explain how a cold case investigation is different than a fresh homicide investigation?
Well, in a cold case, you're going to have certain limitations depending on how well, as I mentioned, how well the scene is documented, the evidence is collected and preserved. In a lot of cold cases, the evidence gets lost, misplaced, it's not analyzed properly. Now, with a fresh case and the things that we can do today, if the evidence is preserved properly in a cold case, then you can have additional tests run, such as DNA, and with all the national databases that we have, like the APHIS or fingerprint database, the DNA database, and NIBIN, which is a firearms database, all of those things really help as far as today's cases go. But if the evidence is not really preserved well from the older cold cases, it makes it difficult. And another thing is that a lot of times the cold cases are picked up by a detective that was not at the original scene, so they don't have that personal observation in looking at the scene and being able to tell what transpired there. So cold cases are difficult, and you do have limitations. However, with a fresh case or a current homicide case, then you have the advantage of all of these things at hand if it's utilized.
Can you tell us what evidence the district attorney's office asked you to examine?
I was asked to examine the crime scene photographs, the autopsy report, crime scene investigation, the crime lab reports, to see if it would be consistent with the statement given.
How much time do you really have to spend examining and closely looking at all this evidence before you can come to an opinion?
It takes a while, depending upon the case. Just analyzing it, because you have to dissect it, look at each piece of evidence recovered, look at each photograph minutely, inch at a time, and you have to put all this together. You correlate the injuries with the blood that's at the scene, and then you compare all of that with the statements line by line to determine at what point, you know, the person is telling the truth or what point that they're lying.
I know that a small spot of blood can actually tell you a story about what went on. Tell us some of the things you can determine from looking at a blood spot or a blood pattern.
Well, blood pattern analysis is a study of the size, shape, distribution, and location of the various types of stains. And due to research and in the publications and so on, we know how these stains are created. So by knowing how the stains are created, we can then determine, okay, was this person standing, sitting, were they lying, was the perpetrator close to the victim, not close to the victim, and so on. So by looking at the stains and determining the angle, direction, and location, it can tell us an awful lot about what transpired at that crime scene.
And I know that all the listeners are familiar with Dr. Henry Lee, and I know that you're familiar with him as well. Can you tell us about your meeting with him?
Actually, I've taught on the podium several times with Dr. Lee. Also taught at the University of New Haven, his Forensic Science Institute up there. I've known Dr. Lee for years, and we've corresponded on numerous occasions. I've also taken courses under him in Connecticut and so on. So Dr. Lee and I go back a long way.
I know that as an expert, you just simply put out the facts and let the jury decide. Tell us how you're able to maintain your impartiality.
Well, you have to be impartial, and you follow the evidence. You don't put in your feelings into any of this. Basically, I don't read the statements until after I have finished all my analysis and have gotten the information I'm going to get and put together a sequence of events, and then I will read the statement. Therefore, that keeps you objective and neutral. And when I testify in front of the jury, I put the facts out. This is what the evidence showed. If it's contrary to what the suspect says, then the jury has to make that decision as to who they believe.
Jerry, the audience may not know, but you are a major reason that a murderer is in prison. I'm talking about Cal Gilley, who was tried and convicted of the murder of Laura Salmon, which was our first cold case. Laura Salmon was another MTSU student that was killed, and her killer was not arrested for over 20 years. Tell us what you were able to determine when you examined the evidence in the Gilley case.
As you referred to earlier, the blue jeans that we examined the first time I was up here, there were two pair of blue jeans found at the scene. One belonged to Ms. Salmon, the other belonged to Kyle Gilley. And Mr. Gilley's statement said that basically he had left them in her car and that they were thrown on the body after fact and he wasn't there. But the impact stains on the front of the blue jeans around the knee area, impact stains on the side of the jeans, again around the knee area, and impact stains on the back of the jeans said somebody was wearing those jeans at the time, because the impact stains have to be created where the perpetrator or the wearer of those jeans just has to be close to the point of impact at the time of impact. And so in looking at the jeans and, of course, the scene itself, was able to determine that he was wearing those blue jeans at the time. They weren't just left in the back of the car where it was there. Somebody picked them up and threw them out on the body. Now, the actual incident started in her car and continued around on the drive there, the road. And then he drug her into the field where he beat her in the head and then move the body again further into the field. So all of that taken together, we were able to put together a sequence of events that took place, and particularly as regarding the blue jeans.
Jerry, I know there's been several television shows that actually cover the Cal Gilley case, and I'll have to say that they didn't give you the credit that you deserved in those shows. I believe personally that your testimony about the evidence in those jeans was the most important testimony concerning the physical evidence of the case. I do not want to take away in any way from the investigation of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office to include Detective Goodwin and Sharp, but your testimony was very impressive.
Well, thank you. If the agency doesn't do a good job in the first place, then I really have very little to work with. So I have to commend the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office, the investigators, particularly Dan Goodwin and Bill Sharp, for their work on the case and the original work that was done way back 20 years prior to that. Because if the scene is not documented properly, if the evidence is not recovered and collected properly and analyzed properly, then there's really very little I can do. So they did a great job on that.
Jerry, I want to personally thank you for helping bring closure to the Laura Salmon family and also bringing the heavy hand of justice to Cal Gilley. It's an honor to know you. You are a friend of crime victims and their family. You are a friend of law enforcement and a friend of mine. And perhaps more importantly, you are an agent for the truth.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me here this morning.
Broadcasting. broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Download the MyMTE app in Google Play or in the iTunes Store and keep up with your electric usage.
The free app gives you better control of your power consumption and provides the ability to see exactly how much electricity you use.
Simply search for MyMTE today.
From call to conviction. Time now for a look back at one of the more intriguing and important cases for this community. From the crime, the investigation, to the prosecution.
We had mentioned earlier the Laura Salmon case in which Cal Gilley was convicted, and we have with us one of the detectives that worked that case, Detective Dan Goodwin. Detective Goodwin, can you give us kind of an overview of the early history of the Laura Salmon case?
Laura was an 18-year-old freshman, had just completed her freshman year at MTSU in May of 1984. Was off for the summer and had just begun a job not too long before working at the then new Kroger on what was Tennessee Boulevard. On May 31st, she completed her shift, got off at about 1:05, left the parking lot. She was observed by a coworker and headed towards MTSU. She was planning to apply for readmission. She'd had some rough grades in the spring semester, and she was not seen again until about 5:40 to 6 o'clock that afternoon. Her body was discovered at the end of a farmer's lane out past the stone quarry off Dole Springs Road out there. She was found out in that field. Officers arrived. They cordoned off the area, took a lot of photography. No one knew who she was at the time. She was identified with her senior ring that she was wearing when they got her to the morgue at the county hospital. Autopsy was performed. It was determined she was killed by multiple blows to the head with rocks that were found in that area. There were suspects immediately. Gilley was one of them, and he had an alibi of sorts at the time from a now deceased person, and then some forensic technology at the time, which was nothing compared to what it is now, came out. There was a hair found in the car that was a 1 in 5,000 match for a man whose name came up the following day in Metro on a rape case. And they kind of canceled each other out for a good long time. Gilley had his alibi and it was a 1 in 5,000 match, and that there was no way to put those two folks together, the other suspect as well as Laura. They could not be put together.
Now, once the case became cold, it remained dormant for some period of time. And I understand that Miss Salmon's mother was instrumental in making sure that no one forgot about her case.
General Weissel can speak to that better than I, but she did stay after police and prosecutors all along. She knew who killed her daughter, and she wanted something done about it. The case was never closed. All homicides are open and just unsolved. TBI was also investigated. Agent Carmouche was assigned to it and would regularly update the case. And periodically, detectives at my agency, before we got there, Bill and I, they would dust it off and look at it, see if they could generate any new leads. But nothing had happened for a long time when we got it in February of 2000.
General Weitzel, how significant was Ms. Mackey's input and her energy in helping to keep this case alive?
Well, it goes without saying that she was always very concerned, wanted the case prosecuted. Shortly after I was appointed district attorney, she came to me and said, I want you to arrest and prosecute Kyle Gilley. And I told her the problems with the case, the same things that my predecessor had explained. And the problem was that we had two potential suspects that mutually excluded each other. We couldn't exclude one to focus on the other. And I explained that to her, but she was adamant. She felt like she was right. I also felt like she was right. But all I could do was promise her that we would do the best we could to try to build a case against Mr. Gilley, and ultimately we were successful in doing that.
Detective Goodwin, can you tell us about what happened when you became involved in the investigation and what caused you to get involved?
A tip came in from a school resource officer at Oakland High School, David Krim. A teacher at his school had overheard conversation between a boy at the school and a friend of his, and the boy said, what would you think if you knew that your father had killed a woman and threw her in a rock quarry? So that got us looking into it. It took us about 2 weeks to go down that path, including trying to get a prospective DNA profile on the man who was being spoken of. The father the boy was talking about had actually been dead himself since 1987. He was the victim of a violent death. So we had to get a profile by getting DNA from his family members. Interviewed everybody we could. There was no known nexus between that person and Laura Salmon, but that had gotten the case started again, so we began back on the original file and set out to get other DNA profiles that might go back to the scene. This case, you see, happened a number of years before DNA profiling came into effect, and for whatever reason, none of it had been submitted before or efforts made to go to those different people. So we quickly, especially with the help of Manatee County Sheriff's Office Detective Rick Gerken, we were able to write a search warrant and get Gilly's DNA in April of 2000. And that came back with a hit on him as being at the scene because of evidence there. On the 16th anniversary of her murder, on May 31st of 2000, he was a positive hit. We also cleared the alternative suspect. He's now a physician in Nashville. He never knew her. In fact, you guys caused us to check him more than once. We had his original DNA, then we went and got it twice more and made doubly sure he was no match for anything found at the scene.
The physical evidence was examined carefully, and scientific evidence was a big part of this case. But how important was citizen involvement?
We began anew on the case file, went through it, looked at people, and one of the people we noticed, and she doesn't mind us mentioning her name, was Kim Roberts Brown. She was a friend of Laura's who was interviewed that night, and we went to her right off the bat and spoke to her, and she provided us a number of names that we should check on.
Was there a large number of people who came forward and gave testimony and evidence concerning the relationship between the defendant and the victim?
We interviewed well over 150 people. Some we generated ourselves, and as word got out, more of them started saying, hey, we know something. I believe, as far as our bad acts go, and you can explain that, General, we found over 20, I believe it's 23, 21 or 23 physical assaults that Gilly had perpetrated on her. Keep in mind, he was a year younger, still a high school guy, and he was beating on her frequently. We were able to finally use 8 of those at trial, and that effect kept going. Every person we talked to, we'd say, who else should we talk to? And they had a list of names. And in the final analysis, what boiled down was originally, no one talked to high school friends of Laura. They talked to college friends, but not people that were still in school or had just graduated. They were, by and large, just not spoken to.
And how important is it to make sure that you contact every person and try to establish what was going on in that person's last 48 hours?
Yeah, or as far back as you can go. We pretty much knew what she did that entire week from the Friday before, when both the high schools graduated, Riverdale and Oakland, all the way through to her leaving the parking lot the day she died.
One of the unique things about this case was that Cal Gilly was charged initially as a juvenile.
Yes, sir.
And at the time, how old was he?
He was 17 when the murder occurred. I believe he was, I'm terrible at math, it was 2001 when he was arrested, so he would have been under 40 years old at that point, I believe. But he did have to be charged as a juvenile, and one of the first things we did was go before the juvenile court and have to present evidence in order to get him adjudicated as an adult so he could be tried that way. Okay. He was even housed with juveniles that had been adjudicated at the jail until the point he was.
How many years passed before he actually went to trial?
Bill and I felt like it went to sleep. Bill Sharp, that is. We had a bad axe hearing that went on review and finally made it all the way up to the state appellate court after 5 years. And in 2006, they said, we need to go ahead and bring this to trial now, 5 years after the arrest.
And General Weitzel, can you tell us some of the interesting aspects of the trial itself?
Paul, I think one of the interesting aspects and one of the things that we really didn't concentrate on back in the early and mid-80s was the blood spatter evidence. There was a pair of blue jeans that had Mr. Gilly's DNA on it, and also the blood that was deposited during the beating of Miss Salmon. And we had Jerry Finley from Georgia, a blood spatter expert, review those jeans, and his conclusion was that at the time she was killed, the person that killed her was wearing those blue jeans because of the pattern of blood that was on them, and that was a very important piece of evidence. I do remember this. It was one of the most intense trials that I've ever been involved in, and I'm sure you will agree since you were sitting there next to me. And one of the things we had to overcome is the defense had their own expert concerning those blue jeans, but there were some things that I don't think that expert had anticipated that we were able to exploit, and I believe that certainly helped our case.
And if I may, real quick, no one ever hears enough about the prosecutorial end of this, but it's mine and Major Sharp's and the rest of the CID unit's pleasure, and you guys need to know that you have two of the best prosecutors in the southeastern United States, perhaps the country. These guys are the real deal.
The Monthly District Attorney Show, heard exclusively on News Radio, WGNS, the first Friday of each month.
As we end our program today, we thank our two very special guests. From the Rutherford County Sheriff's Department, Sergeant Dan Goodwin. And from the world of forensic science, crime scene reconstructionist,
and blood spatter expert Jerry Finley. And we thank WGNS for providing the airtime. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We leave by saying, a safe community is the responsibility of each and every one of us. For my co-host, former District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr., and current District Attorney Jennings Jones, this is Paul Newman, bidding all of you a safe and blessed day.
The District Attorney's Office thanks you for listening to today's program. If you have any information regarding criminal activity in our community, please contact one of our law enforcement agencies. The information presented on today's show is solely for informational benefit and not intended to be legal advice. You should always consult an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice. Rutherford County's most trusted name in news. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro.